Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness, the awakening of the true potential in human beings. And if we really want to know our future, we have to know about the genius of the past. Who are we really? Where did we come from? What is the human being capable of? And that's why I'm talking to the author tonight, John Shaughnessy. He has this whole theory about pyramid power, gravity force. He's a researcher. He's really investigated, I think, the understanding of what ancient civilizations were all about. So, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me tonight, Al. I'm very glad to be here.
Well, what I thought was fascinating about your work with pyramids is that you really have an original take on the whole thing and how it really connects to the landscape as well. So why don't you lay it out for people and then we'll talk about it. So give us the crux of it.
Okay, I'll go back to the beginning. It's how I evolved through the theory myself. And I was watching a little TV show with Michio Kaku.
Michio Kaku, the physicist.
Oh, yeah, I'm butchering his name there. But anyways, he was talking about the pyramids, and basically he said they still don't know what all these pyramids around the globe are doing. And I happen to have a floor-based globe of the Earth in the corner of the room, and I just out of curiosity, thought came to my mind what was actually on the other side of Giza on the same latitude. And I got up out of my chair and took the long walk over to the edge of the living room. It was about 15 feet away, and I turned it, and there was the Hawaiian Islands, you know. Mm-hmm. So that started my investigation of the pyramid alignments. And
what was the line with the pyramid with the Hawaiian Islands? Was the line with the pyramid? You're saying?
The Giza Plateau, the Giza Pyramids were Hawaiian hotspot.
It's the same latitude, you're saying, huh?
Same latitude, 180 degrees opposed to each other and on the same approximate latitude.
I see. Okay.
So that kind of, that was the beginning. And then I got into the Pyramid of the Sun and down in Mexico, and that aligned with Mount Sugiriya on Sri Lanka.
Teotihuacan, yeah, the Great Pyramid in Teotihuacan, which is outside of Mexico City.
Well,
I've been there.
Down there, and that lined up, again, 180 degrees, approximately 180 degrees, and approximately the same latitude. And then the Shen Pyramids in China, the 180 degrees opposed to them was the Bermuda Hotspot, which is two extinct super calderas that make up that island. Again, that was on the same latitude, and approximately 180 degrees away from each other.
So, can I just ask you one question? What were you doing before you noticed? I mean, what kind of work were you involved in before you started noticing these pyramid connections?
I was basically in the power generation business since I picked up a skill in the Navy, and I've always been, involved in paranormal studies and things of that nature. So I was sort of open-minded. I had some close calls with death and a few other, off the wall situations that happened to me. So my eyes were wide open, basically, from an early age. And I was always a thinker and a dreamer. So I worked for Con Edison out of New York, actually, for close to 10 years, in the power industry, making electricity.
Okay, so let's go back to the pyramids. So you noticed these at least six connections so far between pyramids, 180 degrees around the globe, to connecting some very interesting, let's call them hotspots.
And it just kept going on and on and on. Wherever there was large pyramids, there'd be, the same alignments. So I said, well, okay, there's something going on here. So what's the connection? So it was off to thinking, studying. I've always been involved with, some kind of physics, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity. I read when I was younger. Always interested in gravity. I used to do a lot of like home experiments on manipulating gravity, magnetism, and things of that nature. So it developed into a it kind of opened up a Pandora's box. Every time I went down another alley, it would open up, and there'd be more doorways that would open up, and just kept growing and building. And then I got into theory on what was connecting these all these alignments, how they were working with each other. So I came up with an equation that explained it.
Can you go into that a little bit? Because I think that's fascinating.
The equation itself?
Yeah, what's behind the equation, what it means, how we can work with it,
it's, I'll get into that in a second. I just wanted to, the other alignments that I stumbled upon was mountain ranges were actually lining up in the same alignment, 180 degrees opposed to each other and on the same approximate latitude. So there was like, a more or less an artificial structure of the pyramids lining up with a volcano. And then there was like, natural structures like mountains lining up with mountain ranges. So that kind of led me into a gravitational field theory. And I said earlier, I was getting into, crunching out some kind of a formula that explained what was going on. And basically I identified, pyramids, volcanoes, and mountains as geometrical mass above the ellipsoid. And basically what they're doing is kind of the same thing. Everything's relative if it's relative to, most of the things in the universe, it starts to have a, rings true. So
wait, I don't want to lose you. So say that word again, geomassic ellipse. Can you talk about that phrase again?
It's geometrical.
Yeah.
So anything that's kind of got a geometrical shape, hexagon, pyramids, things with sharp lines on them.
Yeah.
Geometrical shape mass. It's any number of different shapes that basically would be, sharp edges to them that have, some kind of a pitch or a radii on their, on the sides of them that go up to.
Okay. So geometrical masses. Yeah. What about them then?
The geometrical masses like pyramids. I'll just stick with pyramids. I don't want to get all over the place here.
Okay.
They're for the most part they're lenses. If you look at what a magnifying glass does to the sunlight, the sunlight is basically a photon, a subatomic particle, a photon. And you take it. I don't know, people when they're younger they play with it. Burning holes in the asphalt, or you can light things on fire as you adjust the magnifying glass to a tight focal point. You increase the density of the photons, and you create heat at that particular point, and it generates heat. And you can light things on fire. But it's but for the most part, that in and of itself is what a pyramid does. It's a lens. It focuses gravitons. Gravity is made up of gravitons. Sunlight's made up of photons, or light's made up of photons. So the only difference being is that the light has a lot higher energy resonance on Earth, that is, and the gravity wave is a lot a weaker force.
Wait, is this because of Einstein's idea that mass interrupts or makes a dent in the time-space matrix, and anything that has mass will make a dent in the gravity field? So it's not just geometric shapes. Any mass will create...
Any mass, but yes, any mass of, the denser the mass, the more of a dent you're going to make in that space-time continuum or space-time energy field.
Right.
So for the most part, it's I started looking at, you know, mass, you know, mountains, pyramids, and volcanoes as having the same effect as the moon does on the Earth. So so yeah, I mean, we all know that the moon controls the high and low tides on the Earth. Twice a day, you get two high tides and two low tides somewhere on the planet. So because it has its own gravitational field. Well, it would. My theories in what I've come to believe is these masses that sit above the ellipsoid, which is above, you know, sea level on land, that are made out of dense material like ledge or stone or, you know, some kind of hard, dense matter that we have available on the planet, creates its own gravitational field. Like there's a lot of... what would you call it, experiments out in the field. If you hung a plumb bob on the side of the Great Pyramid of Giza, it doesn't stay plumb. The mass of the pyramid pulls the plumb bob towards it.
Oh.
So it's got the same effect. And this is like a, you know, it's a natural phenomenon with mountains lining up with mountains. But what was going on is that a mass on one side of the planet would lower the mass exactly opposite, 180 degrees opposite to it, and on the same approximate latitude, and allow mass to grow opposite to it. So just say, for instance,
is that to balance it out? Is that because we need a balance?
Yeah, exactly. Gravity's nature, I've come to believe, has a self-balancing mechanism in it. So if a planet was to get hit by an asteroid and it knocked it out of its spherical shape and there was a big lump on one side of the planet, 180 degrees away from that, you know, lump that was just created by, you know, a collision, you would lower the gravitational field opposite to that and allow mass to grow, whether it's plates shifting or mountains growing or magma coming up in that particular area until it hit an equilibrium.
It's almost as if there's a biological law to the structures of matter. It almost sounds biological, what you're saying.
It's a living entity in the universe. It's the I think gravity, the graviton, if there is one, which I believe there is like the God particle. You know, I think it's the fabric of space before matter actually enters it.
So you're saying, let me just go back to the idea. So you're saying if there's like a high mass on one side, like mountains on one side, they're on the other side, 180 degrees away, there'll be something to balance that out?
It'll actually grow. In height over time, it'll grow up out of the bedrock or out of the ledge or out of the out of the crust of the Earth and grow and actually equalize the gravitational field between the two masses.
Well, let's say about the Himalayas, that are the highest mountains on the planet. What's 180 degrees from there?
Well, you got three mountain ranges in the United States. You have Sierra Nevada, the Rocky Mountains, and the Appalachians. They're approximately 180 degrees away from the Himalayas, and an approximate latitude, latitude. So they are some 30,000 feet, 30,000 foot mountains up there. Anyways. Those kind of line up with the North American continent, which is fairly new. Like those, the mountains in the North America are fairly young compared to other mountains. So they kind of line up with each other, and those mountains are still growing.
Yeah.
And if you get into my science, my theories a little bit deeper, basically, this whole planet has been carved up like a jeweler cuts a diamond to balance the mountain ranges, both on the north and southern hemispheres. You have tabletop mountains. You have mountains. The cheapest, most efficient way to build a pyramid is more or less carve a mountain that already exists. So a lot of mountains have geometrical shapes already cut into them. And I think they were done by the ancient geoengineers, our ancestors, basically who came to the earth and basically created the utopia that we enjoy today by balancing out the gravitational fields. And it's all about magma control and tectonic plate control. If you didn't have some kind of a balance, an artificial balance, the natural balance would be going off on its own. So you would have a lot more tectonic plate slips, tidal waves, all sorts of natural disasters. You probably would have to be as big as a dinosaur to actually survive a lot of it. So that's kind of where it's going. So if you had the Himalayas being pushed up by the Indian tectonic plate, and you wanted to stop that push because you knew it was getting too high and it was just going to cause a massive upheaval of mountains and whatnot over in North America, you would build a pyramid, say, at Teotihuacan.
Teotihuacan, yeah.
And you would create a volcanic island on a tectonic plate, on the Indian tectonic plate, that was pushing up into the Himalayas, causing those mountains to rise. Now, if you put a volcano in on that plate, you could stall the movement of that plate and stop the rise of those mountains.
But you're not saying this is done.
That's what I think the purpose of the pyramids down in Mexico actually did, the Pyramid of the Sun complex.
So you're saying these civilizations had a overview of the whole planet and knew how to work with the energy. I mean, is it possible they had an overview of such a wide scope? I mean, like this?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. A lot of your ancient texts all speak of how the planet was built and by the gods, God, and it kind of rings true. If you look around and you just look at the wonder and amazement of everything, and the odds of a lot of this stuff just coming into existence naturally, is it just gets further and further from view the more you learn, I think, about the dynamics of the physics and the evolution of a planet.
So I think you're onto something here. I think you maybe have figured out one way to control gravity, because you're saying if gravity works and mass works as a response to other mass forms, there might be ways of manipulating mass and creating anti-gravity fields. Are you saying that, sort of?
Yeah. You're creating a dense gravity zone in a particular place on the planet. With the ability to control magma. So if you build a pyramid on ledge, like say the size of the Cheops out there in Giza, a 6 million ton pyramid, that would in effect create a dense gravitational field over that location. And what it would do, in essence, would not only it would pull groundwater up to it, but it would also pull magma up closer to the crust of the Earth under that particular spot. And so you have it's pyramids have three functions. It could it controls magma, it could pull water up to it, and it could rise the surrounding bedrock or the surrounding plateau that a pyramid is built on.
So, I also think it has a healing power as well.
There are multi, dimensional devices. In this field of pyramidology, if you will, it's everybody's right when it comes to their theories. Their water pumps, their stargates, their time travel devices, their healing. I mean, they all kind of, you know, it's a multi-dimensional piece of equipment that can, you know, you can tap, and it's like cogeneration. It has more than just one function. So,
well, let's talk about the time travel capabilities, because if a mass can affect time and space, there's a certain energetic, let's call it dent in time and space, then that could be manipulated or controlled to really carve something out of the time space continuum. How would that work?
Something the size of the Earth, the mass of the Earth, was just floating around like a rogue planet, not in a solar system, had no moon, it would just have a static gravity force on it, right? I mean, if you go back and just look at that sphere, there's nothing really, there's no potential or kinetic gravitational forces on it. Now, if you put the Earth in a solar system like it is right now, the biggest gravitational force on Earth right now is the moon. So you have
and
the moon.
And some people think the moon was... Some people think the moon was an artificial satellite that it was brought there in order to stabilize the energies of the Earth.
Yes. I agree wholeheartedly. It's there's a lot in that topic also. It's right now it's a dead corpse, but at one point, I think you know, it's very inhabitable. It had its own atmosphere to sustain life as we know it on Earth in one form or another. You know, maybe even get a better mango out of it. I don't know.
What makes you think there was life on the moon? What are the evidence that you see?
Well, there's a lot of evidence out there. There's structures on the moon that are starting to come out that have been hidden from mainstream society for, God, I don't know, however old NASA is, and then who knows, even beyond. There's in the Mare Imbrium part of the moon, it's a 750-mile diameter section of the moon, and I think the Chinese landed there not too long ago, I think before the first of the year. But anyways, long story short, there's actually a face carved into the moon. It's gone unnoticed for, I don't know, it hasn't been identified, internationally or nationally yet, or as being a artificial thing, but the geometry of the of that particular area is unbelievable. It's a human face with ears, nose, eyes, even got a beard, and I dubbed him Amun, the Egyptian god Amun. But anyway,
well, even on Mars there's a face that's been confirmed for sure.
Right, right. So I mean, I think the whole planet, the whole solar system is an artificial creation of some advanced beings. I think every being in the universe is a relative of the human family in one form or another. So it's just a time thing. You know, the ebb and rise with intelligence. You have, you know, the rise and fall of intelligence. And it affects everybody, not just people here. I think it affects everything in the universe. So you hit a peak of intelligence, and then you just you fall down, slide back down the bell curve. For what reason? I don't know. It could be cosmic energy forces that you're exposed to in the universe.
But who were these ancients who were they that knew these secrets? I mean, is there a name? Is there a civilization?
I think the Sumerian clay tablets, the Anunnaki, they're our only link to an advanced civilization that was down here, basically to mine gold. Sometimes I think their planet they spoke of, Nibiru, is actually planet Earth.
Uh-huh.
And they were the original geoengineers. I mean, that if you read the text, they were speaking of geoengineering. Gold was a pertinent part of their engineering. Like today, we have the chemtrails a lot of it's starting to come out that they're, you know, the countries are spraying because they know we are in trouble. Things are heating up, and they're doing whatever they can. I think the Anunnaki were much more sophisticated than we are. You know, they weren't spraying, nano aluminum oxide, a nanoparticle that basically is poisoning everything living on the planet. I think the main reason they were mining for gold on the Earth was to convert it to what's that type of monatomic gold.
Yeah,
and I think they were spraying that or releasing that into the atmosphere, which makes more sense if in a geoengineering aspect or technology stance, the monatomic gold is almost weightless, and it wouldn't cascade down to Earth, and it still have the light reflecting capabilities that the short-lived aluminum oxide nanoparticles that they're using today in.
Well, let's just get back to gravity a little bit. I mean, I know we can go way out there in many different. But I'm interested in what you've written, which John Shaughnessy's book is called Pyramid Gravity Force, How the Earth's Pyramids Work. And I think you're onto something, manipulating gravity to move anti-gravity type particles. Talk about gravity, anti-gravity. Do you mind?
I don't really use anti-gravity in my theories. It's just you're manipulating you're making a larger or a denser gravitational field.
How do you do that? How do you make a larger or denser?
You make a denser gravitational field by building a 6.5 million ton magnifying glass, which would be a pyramid. You know, so I mean, it's a lot cheaper to make a pyramid out of 6.5 million. Pyramid out of stone blocks, and it would be to pour a 6.5 million glass pyramid. So that's why the pyramids are stone. I believe they were poured anyways. But so what you
I
do
think
is
they were
okay,
poured too. That's my theory of the Great Pyramids. They seem like poured sand that was emulsified and solidified.
Right. Exactly. There was no cutting involved. So
no, I totally agree because the blocks look just like the sand that's all around it.
Right.
So, you know, and it's all sand, so there's no blocks in the area. So I agree with you on that one, John.
100%. Yeah, I'm 100% there. There was a fellow that wrote a book, I don't know, it was in the 80s, I forget his name, but it was he put out some pretty good evidence on how these things were poured, and he got down to the the atomic level of the structure of the stone.
What's his name, John Dubitsky or something? Yeah, I think I've heard that theory. Yeah, yes.
So, but anyways, the one that's active right now, the Giza Plateau pyramids and the Hawaiian hotspot. Hawaiian hotspot defies logic. To date, there's no real significant theory out there that explains why that thing is still in existence.
I mean, why there's a volcano still going off? Well, aren't there
why
volcanoes?
There's a volcano and you know, for hundreds of thousands of years.
There's volcanoes all over the world. There's Mount Etna in Sicily. There's, you know, I'm sure there's stuff in the Pacific Rim. There's stuff all over. It makes sense to me, as little I know.
Yeah, well, it just kind of holds place. It doesn't move. It just stays in one spot. It's stationary.
I see.
Some tectonic plates, you know, would move, and you know, the hot spot would seal up. This thing just stays it. But it. So what you would do is you wanted to slow down the western tectonic plate. That's basically where the Hawaiian Island is, and it's west of the Pacific Ridge. Which is the center of the, which is a ridge line, where the new, their magma comes out, and you know, it's basically the divide of the plate. One breaks east towards California, the other one breaks west towards Japan.
East.
So Asia, if you wanted Japan, to slow down that plate and stop it from moving fast, you would, you know, build some pyramids in Giza, 180 degrees away from the Hawaiian hotspot in approximately the same latitude, and carve and basically cut through a thermal or a magma current that basically pushes magma up into that mid-ocean ridge.
But it didn't work because there are pyramids 180 degrees and there's still magma flowing out of the ridge.
Right, right. So if you look at what these devices are doing in the Nile Valley, because there's like nine large pyramids in the Nile Valley.
Right.
Further south of that, there's a mountain in the Sudan. So they all seem to line up, right with Hawaii, and it was. So this is the science, is that you have to step back and look at the planet like you're a planet builder, and you've got to control tectonic plates. And the way you control tectonic plates is through magma. And the way you control magma is through pyramids and the moon. So what I was alluding to before, if you had the sphere out in space, you just had static gravity on it. But now that it's in the solar system and you give it its own moon, the moon is the more or less the engine, the gravity engine, the potential energy engine for the pyramids and mountains. There's every day they more or less get stroked with the gravitational fields when they're in alignment. When they spin through the alignment of the moon, they get their the maximum gravitational pull and release as they spin through the moon, as the Earth spins through the moon's gravitational field. So it's like a two-stroke engine and a piston.
What are we doing? What is all this energy? What do we do with all this energy? How is it being utilized?
Well, it's controlling the what's left over of it, what's left over from it, and I feel it's in disarray. You know, it's kind of like it needs, you know, what it's doing. I'll get to that point. It's stroking the magma currents.
Okay, and what does that mean? It's controlling the rise of volcanoes, new volcanoes?
Well, whatever it aligns up with the their reason for controlling the Hawaiian hotspot was because that the Pacific plate is a large mass, and if you puncture a hole in it and lower the magma pressure and put this massive weight on it, like the Hawaiian island chain, and it'll slow down the movement. So it's moving like 4 inches west to Japan, and the east plate is moving 2 inches towards California or North America, or the Americas, if you will. So
right.
So the way I've kind of come to understand it is that they were intently fixed. They had a fixation on controlling magma currents in the planet, in different parts of the planet, and they would use these masses to manipulate the gravitational fields, which in turn would manipulate the currents of magma on the other side of the planet.
And they're still doing that. These pyramids in place are still controlling the magma flows, the fields, right?
Correct. I think Giza is alive. It's very active. The Shen Pyramids in Bermuda are dormant. The Sun Pyramid Complex and Sri Lanka are dormant.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's numerous other ones. You have, what was it, Olympus Mons? Is the pyramids that they just found off the coast of... the Azores. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard of it. They discovered a large pyramid in the off the coast of the Azores in the Atlantic, and that lines up with the Tamu Massive, which is again is 180 degrees opposed to it and on the same approximate latitude. Now that those two masses are underwater. The Tamu Massive is the largest volcano in the solar system. I think it rivals Olympus Mons on Mars. So when we go into an ice age, these masses rise up out of the water and they balance each other out. So you don't have a, you have stability for the most part. You have stability.
Is there a way to use the energy of the earth to start to generate energy that's consumable for human beings? I mean, I believe that the earth is a battery and we just haven't been able to tap it in and convert it into human scale mechanisms.
Yeah, I think Nikola Tesla there, he was playing with his power plants that were basically he was generating power with the differential between the electrostatic energy in the atmosphere and the grounding of the earth. So you have you have a ground and one, you have the earth as the ground and you have the atmosphere as your static generator. So he was tapping into the differential between the energy sources to create electricity. That needs money funding and, we're basically locked down by the oil economy. I think the oil economy giants out there, they really don't want any competition or free energy going out there. They want you to, basically.
Yeah, but you're not working with them, so you must have discovered something, because even in France, they've discovered there's energy between two poles, between two steeples. Would build, there's one in Spain and one in France, and Mount Canigou, one of the highest mountains in the Pyrenees, sits equal distance between these two. And these ancient technologists were into the earth energies that would be generated, or the telluric energies that's been generated between these two poles. How do you understand
energy,
that? Because I don't even know what I said.
So yep,
how do you explain that?
Yeah, back at the telluric energy, well, basically you're picking up voltage between tectonic plate boundaries or tectonic plate materials. Like there's different materials make up tectonic plates. Now, if you happen to live around a place where there's a tectonic plate boundary, you could drive a ground rod into the ground there, and go another 200 feet or a mile away and drive a ground rod into the other plate, and you would have a differential of voltage from those two spots, and you could, you get some capacitors and some...
But how do you access the voltage? Because I think they did this. If you look at what I'm talking about is Rennes-le-Château, it's right at the edge of this hill that drops off very suddenly into a valley, and then you come to the Pyrenees, I guess, maybe 20 or 30 miles away. And then the other side of the Pyrenees is an exact tower that matches the one on the opposing side. So there's some kind of differential there. But how did they access the geoelectric energy from there?
You pound as many copper rods into both areas, both sites. And then you have them come up into, miles of electric coil, and you have diodes to stop the diodes are like a check valve. They only allow the electrons to go one direction. And then you can wind them into transformers. You can step up the voltage, step them down, and get them to match the voltage that is being utilized on the grid wherever you live. Or you can have them go into batteries and then,
like before there was an electrical grid or electricity in general, how would you work with these energies that would be made manifest, and how would you utilize them, and for what reason if there's no grid to start with at that time that these things were being created? Or maybe they knew about it and were able to harness it somehow.
Yeah, I think they were very environmentally conscious, society. They understood every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So they were very energy conscious. They had the technology, and I guess I don't know what kind of equipment they used or what energy forms or sources they used, but I'm sure it was. It would appear to me that they definitely knew how to manipulate gravity. So I would have to say that they would have some kind of a perpetual gravity magnetism machine. That's what I think. That would maybe play off the Earth and the Moon's gravitational fields. Or
well, just to throw out another little piece, I think these people that I was talking about also were able to tap dimensionally or into spiritual realms, or let's call it paranormal realms. Is there any? Does that make sense on any level to you?
Sure. I mean, getting back to an earlier topic we were talking about, what the pyramids could do if the alignments were right.
Yeah.
You tap into. It's all about. You want to get the peak, and the. The release of the alignment, say, on a pyramid like Giza. You might go into the King's Chamber. If you go into the King's Chamber during an alignment where the moon is 180 degrees directly above, say 12 o'clock right over the pyramid. Well, it's close to 12 o'clock. I don't think the moon's elliptic orbit goes as high as the Pyramid of Giza right now. Maybe it did in the past, but you would be inside of a gravity vortex, and you could, more or less tap into, past civilization or future time spots or time.
So, ends. Are you saying it would create a portal? As it's been called.
Absolutely, a portal. I think there's. A broken portal on the planet. The lowest gravitational field on the planet is actually in the Indian Ocean. They actually lost a plane there, I think 2 years ago, a passenger plane.
Is the 180 degrees from there? Because, right, don't you want to trace those low gravity points?
Yeah, the biggest pyramids in the world are down in Central America. And they're actually they line up with this low gravitational field right in the middle of the Indian Ocean, which there are some islands or mountain masses that they're underwater right now because we're in the big thaw right now. The ocean levels are a lot higher than say the normal ocean levels on the planet, which are a lot lower during an ice age. I guess, the ice ages are 100,000 years. The last four ice ages are 100,000 years, and with the interglacial of about 13,500, which I think we're at the end of.
So do you project another ice age coming to us?
I believe so, yeah. I think it's a natural event. Maybe caused by an artificial construction on the planet, or actually it could be also where the sun travels around the outer bands of the Milky Way galaxy, our galaxy. You go in and out of cosmic energy forces, and I think that, it basically either shuts the sun down or you could go through areas where the sun gets much hotter, much intense, which I think we're in right now, so... I think it's a natural cycle of just our traveling through the outer bands of the Milky Way galaxy. Those pyramids out there in Central America line up with that energy, that low gravitational field. Mexico and the tip of the northern tip of South America, is more pyramids in that area. I think there are over almost 300 pyramids in that area alone. That tie into spots in the Indian Ocean, the Andaman Islands, the Andabar Islands, a few other islands down there. It ties into the largest subduction zone. That's the largest subduction zone on the planet, right there. And
have you looked at the Bosnian pyramids and see what that lines up with? The Bosnian one?
Yep, that lies. That ties in actually to the I believe it's the island name here, Midway. It's actually a small island 400 miles northwest of the Hawaiian Islands. So that pyramid does tie into the Hawaiian island chain on the same approximate latitude and 180 degrees opposed to it.
That's interesting. So now that you have this, you sort of, and I think you have figured something out, what can we do now with this ancient geoengineering? How can we work with it? How can we access the free energy that Tesla talked about? Do you have any theories about that?
Well, I think that we're talking about that telluric energy. If you say California, they're on the San Andreas Fault.
Yeah,
that runs right through that, right through the state. And you could they should be like putting grounds on the west side and putting grounds on the east side of that that fault line, because there's two different. It's a fault line. But it's a separation in the tectonic plates, and so there's going to be a differential of electricity between those two boundaries.
And so, what would you put on each side? What's a ground? What would you actually do?
Just a ground, when I say ground, I mean a ground rod, you'd probably drill maybe a couple of 100 feet into the earth, with a small drill, and put ground wires in there, copper ground rods or wires, and so you could tap off the differential of power between the two tectonic plates that are crushing each other there.
And that would prevent.
The old time is back before electricity was really available. The railroads used to use that technology to power the phone systems. So,
they would use earth energies to power the phone system?
They would drive ground rods into the ground in one place and drive the ground rods into the ground in another place along the railroads, miles apart, and they would pick up the differential of electricity and use it to power the phone lines.
Really? What's that called? What's that technology called? I'd like to research that.
I don't know what the technology is called, but I think it's like a telluric. I think it's a telluric energy source.
So they use that to power just the phone lines, but it could be It could power a lot of other things as well, right?
Yeah, because every ground rod, which is a copper bar, that gets driven into the ground, you're going to pull electricity out. You're going to pull the differential of electricity out of the two.
Is that what Tesla had in mind when he said, developed a technology like that? Did he know that, Tesla?
I think he was aware of it because he was picking up. He was going for the differential between the atmospheric charge and the ground, which is even higher. So you can even pick up more electricity with what he was doing.
So why can't we use that electricity now to power our cities?
We can. I mean, it's just a matter of funding and getting his technology back off the ground, really.
Well, what would we need to do that to actually access that differential between the atmosphere and the earth to generate power for the whole world?
You just need a will. I mean, just a group of people getting together and putting up the towers and go back into his work and start working with it and start doing experiments and basically putting it together. You just got to get a group of right people with the funding to go ahead and do it.
So if you could figure that, you would put up towers, you'd ground copper coils into the ground that would create of accessing energy between the atmosphere and the earth. Is that
right?
Right. which is how lightning works, basically, right?
Exactly. So millions and millions and trillions of volts of electricity, and you wind it up into usable electricity, say high amps, or if you bring it into a transformer and converters, inverters, and get it into say the grid or so you have the infrastructure already here. So I read up in Tesla. I read a lot of his books, and it's just mind-boggling that it's not being pursued.
Yeah, why is that, you think? You think there's a conspiracy not to?
Well, you have people in control, and they like the way things are going, they like the meter on your house, and, because I've worked for the utilities, so there's definitely, I think it's a headless monster now. I don't think anybody's in control. It's just it's all about the share price. Keeping the company going. If you don't do well as a CEO, you're out the door, and the next one's in there to take your place. So. It's to me, it's like a headless monster. It's just completely out of control. But there are people at the 0.00001% is out there that own everything on the planet, kind of like the way things are going. So
they do like how it's going. You're saying
so what? Like how it's going. They own everything,
But you've discovered some secrets, it seems like, or maybe they're not secrets, you just put it together. Yeah. It seems like, I don't know about easy, but it seems logical that people could get together and create one of these, accessing the differentials.
Yeah, Tesla towers. You would think, some guys out of some students out of MIT or the learning institutions. You would think it would be they would, because a lot of his work is now declassified. It's kind of out. I mean, some of it's missing a lot of data, but you can pull it all together again.
I wonder if anyone's really doing that. That's really interesting. Let's also talk about your law of gravity formula, because I think you have something in there. Can you go over that?
Yeah, it's a pretty simple formula. It's AMC squared divided by dB. So basically, it takes in the angle of the mass. So say the side of a mountain, the side of a pyramid, the side of a volcano.
Well, the side of the Great Pyramid is 52 degrees, and there's some extra energy that happens because of that 52 degrees of the Great Pyramid.
Yeah, it's definitely set up. It's a focal point in mind. If you look at the pyramids, they all have focal points in them. Like Giza's like one of the Giza's like the Ferrari of the pyramids, if you will, Lamborghini or whatever.
What is a focal point? What do you mean by that?
You have three focal points in the center line of the pyramid. You have the King's Chamber, the Queen's Chamber, and the Subterranean Chamber.
Right, I've been in those. Yes.
So if you wanted to increase the volcanism out in the Hawaiian Islands, just say. You would put dense material inside those three chambers, okay?
If I want to increase the volcanic activity in the Hawaiian Islands, I'd put dense material in those chambers.
In the King, Queen, and the Subterranean Chamber. What I mean by dense material is like gold, uranium-235, very, very dense material, lead. I think gold's even denser than lead. What? So you would take like just say you wanted to increase, the bulk. Like just say right now you're a planet builder. You don't like the volcanic activity that you're seeing all over the planet, which is actually true. Most of every volcano that could go off has been going off in the last 4 or 5 years. Just say you wanted to get control of that and alleviate other volcanoes from going off around the globe, because I call the Hawaiian Islands the exhaust of the Great Pyramids of Giza. But anyways, getting back to that, what you would do is you would take the gold reserves on the planet and put them inside the chambers, king, queen.
Well, do you think with the capstone was supposedly gold on the Great Pyramid, and that?
No, I don't. I don't think the pyramids were ever built with, up to a point, up to an apex.
Oh, you don't think they had capstones? Okay.
No, they were built. They were built to create a stratification of the gravity wave. And basically, what you do is on the Great Pyramid of Giza, there was a gentleman by the name of H.D. Buie, I think, in the 80s. He was funded by the EDF Foundation. He went out and did a microgravity reading of the exterior of the Cheops, GP1, and he came up with seven stratification zones on the Great Pyramid of Giza. Now, the seven's a key number because you have three focal points: the king, queen, and subterranean chamber.
Right.
So basically, you would want a flat top on top of the pyramid because that's a high density. That creates a high density zone at that particular place. So if you go to my website, I have a picture of his microgravity reading. It's called the densitogram, and it shows the top is like one of the is a high density gravity reading, and then it goes low, then it's high. So basically, it's high low all the way to the grotto or the ledge. So So if you wanted to, increase the gravitational field, lower the gravitational field, allow more magma to come out of, say, Kilauea out in the Hawaiian Islands, you would fill up those particular chambers up with gold, and you would seal the pyramid back up. All these pyramids around the world that everybody's found, the first thing they do is they go into them. When you go into them, you're neutralizing, you're upsetting the gravitational field balance inside these pyramids, these masses. So what you're doing is you're lowering the gravitational field that thing once had and was once tied into another mass on the other side of the planet. So you would have to. So basically, you're looking at pyramids that have been damaged out in Giza because of. I think in 822, Al Mamun went in there. He went in there and blasted his way into the king's chamber. And then in the 1800s, you had Colonel Weiss with his gunpowder archaeology. He was blasting away at that thing for years looking for the big stash. He never found any. That's because there never was any. They're machines. So basically, you would fill these things up, seal the shafts off, and this would increase the gravitational density there. And over a period of time, you would increase the volcanic activity in the Hawaiian hotspot. And that would lower magma chamber, or lower the magma pressure in the Earth in general, and prevent a lot of these volcanoes from blasting off.
So the ancients really understood the totality of the planet, and they understood that they could work with nature, create a balance, and also, in a way, control it for their own power if they wanted to do that as well.
Correct.
Right?
Correct, yes. So they were the planet builders. I call them the planet builders. They built the solar system,
You're talking about the Anunnaki, basically, huh?
The Anunnaki, yeah. The Anunnaki.
And so they probably pulled the moon into place as well.
It's entirely possible it was the Anunnaki. I think that's as far back as we can go, I think. We'd have to,
They weren't all bad. They weren't using us as a slave race, necessarily. No. They were using us, they were here to help create a paradise for humans, really, I think.
Right, yeah. I mean, they enjoy the natural, the beauty of nature just like we do. We have their DNA in our blood,
We are them, I think.
We are. I mean, I think for the most part we are. They were, I think they came here, for the minerals, for their own objective. They're probably... interstellar people bouncing all over the universe, seeding the universe, and who knows? I mean, we're getting to the point where we're, at the point where we could manipulate DNA, more or less create life. We're on the infantile stage of genetics, but sooner or later we'll be taking the gaps, the caps off of the DNA strands, and we'll be walking around with elongated skulls and who knows what, you know?
Do you think the elongated skulls helped fine-tune the mental capacity of these beings?
Yeah, I think it. I think it definitely increased their ability to think and, you know, live in different dimensions. Probably didn't have to talk as much, you know, maybe enjoy that much more. You know, there's so much more out there to enjoy. So,
well, I think you're really onto something really interesting. I just want to go over this: the law of gravity. If you work with that, is it possible to manipulate the gravity to create other levels of gravity, anti-gravity?
Yeah.
I think I asked that before, but I didn't quite understand what you're saying.
I kind of got sidetracked. I'll just go over my equation first, and we'll hit that. It's like my equation's AMC squared divided by DV, and it basically A is at the angle of the mass, which is the angle of the pyramid.
Right.
And then you times, you know, multiplied by the mass, so whatever the mass is above sea level or the ellipsoid. And then you multiply it by the speed of light and divide it by the distance between that pyramid and the Earth core. And then you multiply that by the gravitational constant. So it's pretty simple formula, and equals S.
And what does S do? What is S?
Well, because I'm so far out there, I had to create my own units of measure. So S is Shaughnessy. I couldn't think of anything else to call it at the time. So.
So you take now what? Now you're saying the angle of the pyramid has an effect on the mass. Is that what you're
right.
saying?
Right. It's just like when you go to your eye doctor. These things are pretty close to optic physics. You go to your eye doctor to get another set of glasses. He tests your eyes and says, okay, you need, you know, a lens this thick or that thick with this, you know, with this type of a cut in it. So that's it. So, you know, the bigger the angle, the more the higher the concentration at that focal point. But it also relates to the mass of the material also. The denser the material, the more dense of gravitational field is going to be inside that structure, in the center line of that structure.
Have you looked at these new pyramids that they're building in Russia, very sharp slope to those? Have you seen those Russian pyramids?
Yes. Are they hollow? Or are they?
Yeah, they're hollow. Are they doing anything, or is this kind of a joke?
To me, I don't think they're doing anything, because you really need the mass. You know, it's like, if I sold you a glass lens for your glasses and it was hollow, you wouldn't get the magnification out of it. You know what I mean?
So the mass times the angle. I mean, this is
the
pretty
angle
amazing.
Times mass.
And now why would it have to be so they must have understood what the mass was when they were, before they even built it.
Yeah, if you look at a lot of these pyramids, they've been enlarged. A lot of the investigative researchers and scientists said that these things were rebuilt over time. So I think what happens is the Queen's Chamber was actually in place where it was actually the highest chamber in, just say, the Great Pyramid of Giza. And then they realized, okay, we need to get more energy out of this pyramid to keep the Hawaiian hotspot open, because that is the key relief valve on the planet.
That's where the eastern fault meets the western faults. I mean,
right,
that's where the ocean divides. You're saying?
Well, it's west of that, but it's at that 19 point something degree. It seems to be a reoccurring, event on the other planets in our solar system. There's a lot of big activity at that particular latitude. At any point, because the Hawaiian island grows, it's growing, So it's over, say it's over the height of the pyramids of Giza. So you would have to enlarge the mass at Giza to lower the gravitational field in Hawaii to keep this hot spot open.
And to keep it open. You want to keep it open? You don't want to close the hot spot?
No, you want to keep the hot spot open. Yeah, you want to keep it open. And
because why? What will that create, more magma?
Well, yeah, it's like pressure. It's a pressure thing, I believe. It comes down to pressure. You look at the force of these volcanoes that have been exploding around the globe. I mean, it was a point there. It was like almost every week at every four corners of the planet, there was a volcano going off. There's a massive amount of energy tied into this magma core, magma chamber on our planet. And whatever's heating it up, I think it's externally myself. I think there's a lot of cosmic energy, forces. We're more or less, as the Mayan calendar suggests, we're at the in the middle of the storm. We're more or less in line with the galactic center. There might be higher energy at that level than if we're halfway down between the bell curve, if you will, or the curve. So or the sine wave.
Well, I think this is amazing. I think you've really figured something out. Very well, exciting and new technologies.
Well, it beats the tomb theory, you know.
Well, it makes sense about the Queen's Chamber because it's very well formed,
yeah.
And it's not as massive as the King's Chamber,
right.
And it seems like you'd have to have a smaller structure in place,
right,
in order to build the King's Chamber above it and create,
right,
the Grand Gallery. So,
So basically, the footprint got enlarged, and they went up another 100 feet, and then they had the King's Chamber. So they, in essence, made the gravitational fields in that particular pyramid maybe a third stronger than it was.
And what's the reason for the pit below the Great Pyramid?
If you look at the other pyramids, in the plateau, they all have a focal point at the subterranean chamber, or a little bit below the grade. That's their focal point on those particular pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those places.
What do you mean by focal point? What do you mean by?
The focal point is going back to a magnifying lens. If you take a lens,
oh, I see.
You adjust the sunlight coming through it until it gets to the tightest particular spot, you're doing the same thing with the gravitational field. You're using these pyramids to get the gravitational field into the tightest possible focal point in that mass, and that more or less increases the gravitational field in the center line of that particular pyramid. But getting back to, so that was just another focal point.
But you also might have a point about the mound builders and how actually some of all the early presidents of the U.S. had their houses built on mounds,
right,
in order to access power.
Could be power. These mounds, pyramids, masses are cogens. If you build a pyramid, say they're having a severe drought out in California, their water tables are diminishing, going lower and lower by the minute. And if you built pyramids on the grade or on the ledge in different parts of California, you would create a dense gravitational field over that particular area, and you would pull the groundwater towards it. You would raise the groundwater up in that particular area. So you might even increase the leaching of the ocean water going through the grade, and fill the ground tables up.
They could use that in California where there's droughts then, right?
Right. So, I mean, that's another, particular reason for building mounds. Like, you have a lot of mounds in the U.S.
I see.
I mean, it could have been used to pull groundwater towards them.
Why don't they use that in California where they need groundwater?
Like, technology is fairly new. I mean, it's this science that I'm, you know, more or less tapped into, this Pandora box that I've opened. It's kind of, I'm just trying to get it out there, you know, so people in the mainstream, trying to get published in a couple of physics journals, you know, putting it out there, and they can do tests. I know the Russians, not these hollow pyramids, but the Russians did build a few pyramids, solid pyramids, over some gas fields or some oil fields, and because they were having problems with pumping them out. And after they built the pyramids over them, they were it cured the problems that they had. So they were able to pull the material out of the ground.
So, wow, I mean, John, I think you've created a whole genre of geoarchaeology, and there's something valuable in this.
Yeah, I just tapped into it. You know, I just tapped into it. That's kind of what I used to do. Well, I still do is, I'm troubleshooting. So, this is actually reverse engineering. I've stumbled across an ancient technology, and it's just a process of reverse engineering. And it's, unfortunately, the physics is, we're not at the level of the physics that I'm talking about.
What made you think the pyramid was a technology to begin with?
When I saw the alignments with all the volcanoes and the mountains lined up with mountains, I said, okay, was the only rational explanation I could come up with was the gravitational fields.
This was no accident that these 180 degrees existed all over the planet.
No, not at all. No, they were. It's like the what came first, the chicken or the egg. So that's the only question I have left. What came first, the mountain or the volcano or the pyramid?
But I would say the volcano came first because. But how come no one else has discovered? Been known at least for a couple of hundred years the geography of the planet, pretty much.
They were all stuck on this word antipodal, which was basically, you take a yarn pin and you stick it straight through the globe, through the core, and it comes out the other side.
Right.
And that's what they were focused on. They weren't
that's
focused on...
That's not what's happening, you're saying? Where's the 180 degree exist? I mean, on the curve?
It's on the latitude. Everything is in alignment on that latitude. So the latitude rings.
Oh.
I'm not sure, why they didn't pick it up. I'd be honest with you, it's like as big as day. You can't not see it. Once you've been told about it, you pick up a globe, you hold your finger around one end, you spin it around, and you're 180 degrees, approximately 180, and approximately on the same latitude with these alignments. So
So you've really discovered something. That's pretty amazing.
I was pretty freaked out there for a while. It was like, you're getting into some things and it's starting to get scary and exhilarating and, you're making up words and...
Well, because you've discovered something new. Obviously, you did discover something. I don't know the technology the way you do, but it seems like you have a pretty original idea here.
Yeah, it's relative. So, I mean, everything kind of just falls into place, like every step of the way, it kind of just fell into place one thing after another.
Well, a lot of ideas have been ignored. The guy who said, don't you think South America fits into Africa? I forgot the guy's name, but he was laughed at because no one... believe those, or the guy who discovered that the heart really pumped blood, he was laughed at. There's so many new ideas that are not taken seriously until a certain time comes around.
It just takes time, I'm pushing it out there. I got my video channel on YouTube on the John.
What is your website is pyramidgravityforce.com.
Right.
But what's your YouTube?
YouTube is just John Shaughnessy. If you go to my website, pyramidgravityforce.com, there's a YouTube link right there. You can go to my channel. I try to put a couple of videos out a month or when I get some new stuff. I'm pretty active.
Well, do you have a conference? You have something coming up, right? Do you have a conference coming up?
I have a conference in September 2015 out in L.A.
Oh, really? What's that about? What's that conference?
Alchemy event. It's the Alchemy event.
You're speaking at the Alchemy event. I've been at those. Those are good events. There are some great people that show up there.
That's
an open audience that would be, receptive to these ideas. Yeah. I really think so.
So I got another book coming out, and I'm hopefully in September. When I first wrote my book, it was just a glimpse of the technology, and now, it's like 3 years, 4 years later. I have a lot more science, a lot more facts, a lot more alignments and technology and physics to actually give it more credence, more gravity, if you will. No pun intended, but
that's funny. That is funny. Well, thank you, John.
We need more gravity.
I think you're onto something. Any final words you'd like to say before we wrap up?
If you're out there, get active. This is wide open. It's not just it's the ancient science, And if you want to contact me, I'm available. I have my emails on my website, and I think it's all part of the paradigm shift. There's a lot of people out there. And we're all moving to a higher ground, I think. And it's not a moment too soon. I want to thank everybody for listening, and thank you again, Alan, for having me. I appreciate being on your show there.
Well, I'm really excited. Once you got into it and really understood what you're talking about, it's a huge shift in understanding that ancient people had a global perspective and were able to play with the forces of nature to start to build greater civilizations because they were balancing the place out.
Right. They were carving up mountaintops. You have tabletop mountains down in Peru. The Himalayas have actually carved like pyramids, the tops of them. So they're setting up the focal points and.
So these mountains were actually carved, you feel, by this greater civilization?
Oh, yes. They were actually carved into geometrical shape, pretty perfect. Even in the Swiss Alps, they have pyramids on the top of their, up in the Alps.
That's not a natural formation?
No, I don't think so. I think it was set up. I kind of live by Mother Nature doesn't make things in straight lines. Well, that often anyways, but.
So that's pretty amazing. Like right in front of us, there's these sculptured mountains that everyone thinks are natural phenomena, and you're saying they've been manipulated? That's pretty amazing.
They were carved, honed, blown up, cut to set up a geometrical mass to create the focal point inside that mass. To balance.
Wow. That's a breakthrough discovery, I think. I mean, I'm not sure what to do with it, but I think just noticing that is pretty. I mean, everyone just assumes, of course, but you're saying, no, let's really look at this, and does that really occur in nature?
Right.
Yeah.
If you count the numbers of them, and then you start saying, okay, well, wait a minute. One, okay, two, maybe, but, 20, 30, 100, or 1,000 of them is just no. It can't, the odds are just, incomprehensible.
And why does it have to be pyramid shaped? Because of the angles that affect the mass?
Yes, the angle, it's all about a magnifying glass. The pyramids are just an oversized magnifying glass. It just sets up the focal point, inside the mass.
And so they couldn't create mountains like in the, Sahara there, and they would create pyramids.
Right, right. So they balance it off. And I think that the African tectonic plate is locked in place. They really don't have any evidence of that plate moving.
Why is that, you think?
I think it's pinned in place because of the pyramids and the sculpture of the mountains.
But the Asia Minor plate that's separating through the Giza, the Suez, yeah, there is separating from the African plate, because you can see.
Right, that's on the move.
That's on the move, but Africa's stationary. That's interesting.
Another reason for, I don't know if, what was this, Michael Tellinger? He's from South Africa. What do they got, like 20 million of those stone circles down there?
Yeah, what is that about, you think?
That's just another plate stabilizing technology, I think, you know.
Are there less earthquakes in Africa, or that doesn't make a difference, you think?
I think Africa's a fairly stable continent compared to the rest of the world. So
that's really interesting. I'm going to research what if that's true, but I'm sure you've done that. That's a really great observation if it's true.
Pretty stable anyway compared to the other places. Like
John, you are an original thinker. I'm really happy to talk to you.
I'm out there, man. Yeah, appreciate it. I'm glad to talk to like-minded people like yourself, you know.
Well, yeah, this goes along with the expanding Earth theory, which is, I guess, would not really go along with your theory, but you know the expanding Earth theory, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's kind of, we're taking in, I'm not 100% sure of it, but I think it's like we're taking in millions of tons of mass every year.
Well, that the Earth is growing. That's why, islands separate from continents.
Right.
I mean, that's a whole other thing, but I'm saying your stuff is... It's along those kind of way out ideas that make a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, they make, yeah, it's kind of, you know, it does make sense. The more you look at it, you say, okay, you know, it's, you want control over your tectonic plates, and that's, you know, the way you get that is controlling magma currents. And the way you do that is with pyramids, and the way you manipulate magma is through the moon's gravitational pull and release every day. So, you know, it helps. We see the moon's energy. It lifts trillions of tons of water every day.
And
so
also,
is right there. So, and it moves water, and magma is like a liquid. So it's going to pull and release the magma.
Even more important, I think, than moving the water currents, it moves the air currents and helps clean the atmosphere, because if it can pull on the mass of water, it definitely pulls on the mass of the air.
Absolutely.
And helps clean the atmosphere as well. The moon, the tides of the air.
Yeah, flexes the gravity neutral zone in the core of the planet. You know, so there's a lot. The moon is like the main engine of the planet. It gives us the tides. It cleans everything.
Right. The neutral entities and energy zone in the middle of the planet, Nassim Harmin says there's a black hole in the center of planets that would create that neutral density.
Right. And that's possible. They say at some point it starts pushing out, so there's a gravity neutral zone or a zero gravity neutral zone somewhere.
Well, that would make sense about the black holes at the center of planets.
Yeah, it'd be some like a micro mini black hole, maybe an MBH, a nano black hole. So,
right.
The other thing was the 200 or 300 pyramids down in Central America. They put those there. That's a fine strip of land right there. That Central America is a very thin band. You know, Panama and
right between Greece, North and South else. America.
They built all those pyramids on there to raise that ground up, because the other thing that they wanted to control was the ocean currents. If you lost that peninsula of Central America, you would knock out the north-south ocean currents on the Pacific and the Atlantic.
So you're saying if the Atlantic bled into the Pacific, there was a merging of oceans instead of Central America dividing the Atlantic from the Pacific, what would happen to the planet?
You'd wipe out the natural ocean conveyors. So it was very important to have that strip of land remain in place separating the two oceans.
Wait, so if we knocked out the ocean conveyors, there wouldn't be the Gulf Stream warming Europe there?
Yes, it would be. It would disrupt everything. You'd have, maybe, Arctic weather in England or North America all the time, or it would really wreak havoc.
Without Central America, the Earth would go into a more of a permanent ice age.
In the Northern Hemisphere, yes, or even in the Southern Hemisphere.
That's a pretty amazing discovery.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we're going to have more conversations. John.
Okay.
John, this gets more and more fascinating. I have to tell you, it really, really does.
It just grows. It just grows and grows and grows. So I'm happy to share with everybody.
I will talk.
Just a messenger.
No, you are a good messenger. We'll get into it. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for this. We're talking to John Shaughnessy. Look up his book, Pyramid Gravity Force, on his website, pyramidgravityforce.com. And fascinating, amazing new field just created, really single-handedly. Incredible. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. Thanks for listening. And if you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. Thanks. Good night.